The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
It's morning again in America. Today, more men and women will go to work than ever before in our country's history. With interest rates at about half the record highs of 1980, nearly 2,000 families today will buy new homes. More than at any time in the past 4 years. This afternoon, 6,500 young men and women will be married. And with inflation at less than half of what it was just 4 years ago, they can look forward with confidence to the future. It's morning again in America. And under the leadership of President Reagan, our country is prouder and stronger and better. Why would we ever want to return to where we were less than 4 short years ago?
Gives you chill.
Good morning. I'm Nick Gardner. I'm here with Chris Street. I played that because I feel like Donald Trump could have said that at the end of his presidency. COVID kind of goofed him up, but I still think he could say it with COVID. And, boy, I'll tell you, I don't believe Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have a chance of saying anything close to that.
Well, Nick, I think that you've got to understand how much the transition from Trump is to Biden. I've got some statistics this morning from the National Disease Authority, and they're saying that depression in America from Trump's last year in 2020 jumped the first year of Biden administration from 22.9% of Americans having some kind of diagnosis of depression to 28.6%, and hit a new high this year, 29%. So it's not mourning in America for 29% of Americans.
Well, maybe we ought to bring back the 60s where they spun everybody on Valium. That'll make us feel better.
Well, that was happy talk, wasn't it?
Oh, boy. Yeah, it affected my family. But you know what? I got to thinking about this, and I absolutely believe that the COVID virus was turned loose by China to knock President Trump down, to diminish his accomplishments.
Well, I've got some inside information on that. For a fact, my friends have factories in Wuhan, China. And to understand the Chinese, you've got to understand that in China, there are rigid communist rules, and everybody's to rigidly follow the rules until you pay the bribe. And when you pay the bribe, there are no rules. So what really went on in the Wuhan lab, and by the way, there are four Wuhan labs. One is a level four, which is the most extreme pathogens. And then there are two level three. The two level three are military labs. So that's all wound together. Needless to say, this had tremendous military overtones. But in China, they would have these lab animals. They would then use them for gain of function, very, very dangerous stuff.
If it's for me, I'm not here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's right there in front of you.
Oh, in front of me. Okay, I had up for this. So they would have these labs, and they would have these animals, and they had the most sophisticated burn equipment in the world, and 4,000 Kelvin. I mean, just turned to dust immediately. But those animals were valuable because in China, you have these ceremonies every time you take somebody out to dinner. In China, we don't go out to dinner together. I take 50 or 60 people and have a whole show. And part of that is very exotic animal food, such as bat soup or, other kinds of civet and such like that. So they would sell those animals instead of burning them and sharing the money in the lab.
Sure.
So everybody knew.
Oh, I read where the employees of the lab were high-grading the excess animals, the ones that had already been used, and selling them in the so-called wet market.
Yeah, that's about 400 yards from this lab. But everybody in Wuhan, China, knew this was the atomic bomb coming. There's no way you could stop it. And these are Western guys that run factories there. It was common knowledge what was going on.
But the timing was so precise.
I think there had actually been leaks before.
Yes.
So there were stories that there were leaks before. So I don't know if there was some, you know, some application of that. I'm just telling you that it was well known that there were problems, and there had been problems with leaks before.
Well, I read where Vladimir Putin was taking out biological labs in the Ukraine.
Hmm. There are actually, interesting you say that, there are 13 experimental labs in the Ukraine. So the U.S. funded most of that, and a lot of it was done also with the World Health Organization. So, you know, should a place like Ukraine, which was considered the second most corrupt place in the world, really be playing with pathogens at this level?
Well, they're probably the only ones that would. But, you know, what about this China lab found down here? What was it, Yuba City?
Yeah, Yuba City, they had a lab. It had come in. It had got all the permits. It had been inspected by all the people. The reason it got found out is a new hire who had no idea the political system and such like that, you know, how things are done. You know, she went out on a normal inspection and saw the piping and saw the structures and knew that that there were actually, you know, experiments being done there. And then she reported it, and the whole thing went poof. Everybody just ran and distanced themselves. There's still a lot of issues about what happened in those inspections before, because they had to know about all that piping.
Sure. I understood that she just noticed that was a code violation, and that's what started it all.
Right.
But there's rumors that there's others around the United States, and that certainly could be easy. They could be hidden in the hills right up here outside of Reading.
Well, we've been doing gain of function, and when I say we, the United States has been doing gain of function since probably 2007, and that gain of function started in North Carolina. It was well known, the professor that led this. Matter of fact, he was one of these people who was hired by China in what's called 1,000 talents. So literally they hire you as a professor, somebody very, you know, with real intellectual property. They pay you a huge amount of money to go over in your, you know, new facilities in China that you visit one day, and then for 2 weeks you just go on a luxury everything. And I mean everything. Show, and then you come back, and hopefully you transfer technology, you do what they say. But this is a form of bribery that, you know, was going on until Trump actually put his foot on the neck of it. I mean, this was well-known activity.
Oh, sure. And they probably took videos, compromising videos, and blackmailed them any way they could.
That was part of that everything, isn't it?
Sure. Well, you know, I read something about the Biden administration putting sanctions on Russia, and that means that they couldn't use the United States currency for foreign investments or foreign transactions. Well, aren't you kind of forcing bricks down our throats when you do that?
Well, you're destroying what's called SWIFT. People do not realize that the power of the United States after World War II was a challenge. Literally, the United States had won the war. We were the factory that produced all of the equipment for all of the combatants, and especially, of course, the Allies after 1941. But at the end of the war, all of a sudden, the United States looked around with a smile on its face, and a third of the world had gone communist. So what are you going to do? And the idea was something called Bretton Woods.
Yes.
Where they decided to essentially restart the trading structure, because every war in history was followed by a massive deflation, not inflation, deflation. As people came back, there weren't enough jobs, factories were in transition. So literally the United States decided that they would honor exchanges of all currencies that were their trading partners, and there were 44 originally, and there got up to be about, I think by 52, there were something like 96. But eventually, of course, it took over the world. And we would exchange currencies for another's currency. But the good news was, if you transacted in U.S. dollars, you had about 1.5% advantage over anybody else. And, of course, in business, you know, you talk about, you know, you make these so many dollars. It's not really that you make so many dollars. You make a percentage. And most profits on businesses in America for products are about 3.5%. So imagine that just by using America's currency, you could increase your profits by 40% in export. It was a tremendous idea when it started. It set the gold standard. The problem with it is, of course, you have to these partners, and you've got to believe that they will actually not try to raid your gold over time. And, of course, France did that, and that's what blew it up in the 70s.
Well, didn't we take the reserve currency status away from Britain?
Well, Britain had got rid of the reserve currency status in a form of what's called specie, in the form of silver, during the Depression. But, you know, there was really nothing there to take away. I mean, the system had evaporated.
Oh, yeah, sure. After the war, Britain didn't have very much influence.
You look at the war, you look at World War One, you look at World War Two. It wasn't the Germans that lost the war. It was actually the British. And they started out with the British Empire, and they literally ended up with an empty shell at the end of the World War Two.
There they are. They're sitting silent.
I can see they're coming for somebody. That's right.
They're on the radio. Tune
they
in.
Heard. They're listening.
Tune in at 96.5, KCNR.com, KCNR1460.com. Chris and Nick are on. Well, I don't know where to
Nick,
go.
Nick, I guess I think the important thing today is looking at what you start off by asking about how people feel and how the world is different from Trump to Biden. I think the biggest issue is we're now moving into what's called the October surprise, and people are very, very nervous. Yesterday, a journalist asked Biden, "Aren't you afraid of starting a war?" And he told him to shut up. I mean, literally what they're doing in Ukraine right now is pushing the envelope, and obviously, you know, Biden and Harris, you know, they're getting defeated for their record. And they're desperate to do something, and people are really starting to fear there's going to be an October surprise, whether it's military or whatever. But this thing is starting to wind up like a spring.
Well, I'm worried, too. You know, our strategic reserve is probably down to about way less than 50%. Our ammunition is depleted. We don't have the manufacturing facilities to boost it up and go to war. We, you know, I was reading where we, over the period of 4 months, were supplying over a million 155 howitzer shells to them, that we can only replace it about 30,000 a month. And we're depleted. And why are we doing that? Ukraine's fighting that war with our munitions.
That's exactly right. More importantly, it's the numbers that I have are that we're going to produce 250,000 155 shells this year. Russia's producing 250,000 per month.
Oh boy!
And we're going to, you know, be giving these shells, you know, to Ukraine, to Israel. I mean, America's got itself in its own trap. I mean, this was a well-designed, foolish move, right? That if you thought you could, I understand the concept of becoming a globalist. You know, we're going to have all these inputs and factories, and we're going to use labor and such like that. It was really a scam to break wages. I mean, illegal immigration, they're scams to break wages. And so they, you know, they may actually make profits, but over time they change the world, and they change the world against the same companies that did this. For example, if you have people start to make these products in China, after a while you don't have people in the U.S. with the skills to make those products.
That's
so
right.
Even if you want to come back, it's not like I just open the doors and, you know, talented people come in. We got rid of all the vocational training in high schools. The interesting thing is how many kids really are going to go to college and make a living off their college education? It works out to about 40%. So that really leaves 60% of Americans are going to have to find something else to do. Hopefully they learn some skills or whatever that went to college. But we have this whole generation. I'm driving by watching the homeless. I mean, you know, those people could easily have been factory workers if they were making $40 an hour, and it was more valuable to go to work in the morning than it was to stay up partying at night. I mean, that's the problem here is you have in America, you have this whole group of people. You could call it a class. You could call it a color. You can call it all those names and play psychology games. The real issue is you took away $40 an hour manufacturing jobs. That's what the real number would be right now. You take that, plus you get overtime. I mean, you're talking about people that have lost $100,000 annual incomes because, you know, you had a policy that you wanted to be a globalist. How do you square that?
I think a lot of that plays into that is they don't have to work. They can survive without working, not just the homeless. You take a look at a lot of the house people that are on HUD, on food stamps, whatever they call it now, all the different programs. How can they afford to go to work?
Well, I started out by saying that there's these real high depression numbers in America. I mean, something really dramatic has changed. I mean, I think there will always be some people that for some reason, I am more optimistic about folks. I think if you gave people very good jobs and they had the training for it and they showed up and they're making $40 an hour, they'd have a real hard time giving that up. They'd have a real hard time partying that away. I mean, some people would fall off, but I think that Americans, they can get up in the morning and do things. Even the homeless, when you watch them marching around carrying all their stuff, they're doing some form of work. Why don't we make it productive? Why do we have to be a defeated country and people talk about this underclass? I mean, the underclass is pretty damn, you know, class-oriented to say, oh, well, they're just losers because, you know, they're not ambitious. Well, what if you happen to be making money off destroying those factories, you know, that those people actually could be working out? So I think that, you know, we all have some blame here. We all let it happen.
Well, sure. And, you know, if they were working, they'd have pride. And everybody wants to have pride.
Everybody.
And, you know, it's just that the communism style doesn't work. It takes the incentive to work away. And that's what we're in. We're not far from communism, in my opinion.
I mean, communism may actually work better than what we have. We have a failed system where we have the wrong incentives. And the wrong incentives are, you know, I'll take care of you, but I won't take care of getting you a job. I mean, we don't have a policy in America that's built around good jobs, you know, at good wages. I mean, you hear the left talking about this. Their idea of good jobs and good wages is just more government employment. But it's the problem with government employment is somebody has to pay. And, you know, we've tried inflation, and that's why I think a lot of people are depressed right now. I went to Costco, on Friday, and I walked in, and I was in the fruit section. I was astounded how much the prices had gone up. Now, I hadn't been there, you know, shopping for food in about a month and a half, but I was just so shocked how much the prices were up. They're up. I could feel it from the dollars. There's the things that I buy. I know what grapes cost. I know what oranges cost. I know what blueberries cost. But those things are all, you know, blueberries were $7.99. Now they're $9.99. I know it's not just the season.
Sure.
There's something in the prices that have changed. Now, maybe, you know, Costco changed its prices because they're going to be less discount. I don't know that. What I do know is I see a bunch of families and they're all looking, and you could just see how wide the eyes are. I mean, you got four kids or something like that. You know, you're a corporation. Your family is a business, and you know exactly what your revenue and your costs are.
Well, what happened with corporations is you had the bosses weren't personal friends, weren't personally involved with the employees. They just wanted to make a profit, and we can cut 150 jobs from Hewlett-Packard over here in California. They're sitting in New York, for example. There's no personal interaction, just profit, profit, profit. Whereas a small outfit like here in Redding, California, you worry about your employees. Well, maybe I'm not going to make as much money this month, but, you know, Johnny's still got a house payment to make. He's still got to feed his kids. You know, Mark Kent touched on this a couple of years ago when he mentioned that a can of tuna was getting down to be about the size of an Oreo cookie.
Right, right.
You know, that was inflation, and it's been going on for a long time.
Shrinkflation.
Yes, and it's just gotten worse, and now it's just right in our face when it comes to prices. I don't know what the answer is. I know in my line of work, I'm not going to get much money. In fact, I'm going to be the first one laid off.
Well, I kind of have a better perception of what's going on right now. I think America is a place where you have these 45-year cycles, and they start off, you know, from a really recession, depression, and people have changed. They're willing to accept more of this sort of pro-production attitude, and then they run through the process, and then you kind of over time, you know, the new ideas sort of run out of gas, and maybe we run out of gas, and we forget how, you know, fortunate we are as Americans. Everybody in the world, you know, Chinese call this Gold Mountain. I mean, they really believe the way we live is just incredible, especially for them. And they know there's a percentage that live like that. But in China, you're never sure what revolution is going to take you out. So, you know, you can go from the top to the bottom pretty fast if the world changes on you. But here in America, we have gone through a cycle. We've had this incredible tech cycle driven by the semiconductor. It's out of gas now. I mean, literally semiconductors are sort of commodities. I know they're important. I know they're sophisticated. I know they get better. But the idea that somehow artificial intelligence, which is really automation, is going to be so disruptive is just silly. And you've seen the stocks start to reflect that in the last 2 weeks. You've had, you know, these tech stocks that were up in some cases 10 times have fallen by about 25%. So I think we are transitioning. If you go, you know, I've been to downtown Detroit. In downtown Detroit, that area, you know, in the 50s had three of the four richest area codes in the world. You go there and you go to Detroit in the 90s and the place looked like a battle zone. If you go to downtown Detroit, this is a place given up by America. You have all these young kids starting new businesses and factories, and they're all packing heat, and the cops know that. But Detroit shrank from 2.3 million to 600,000. It's actually growing. You go to San Francisco, you think you're in Detroit as it started to go down. That's San Francisco. I think San Francisco is the new Detroit.
So where are we transitioning to?
I think you're living in it. I mean, remember when I grew up as a kid here? When I grew up as a kid, it was going and blowing. You had 12 mills.
Sure.
You know, everybody was working. They all had they all had a good life. Kids, everybody wanted kids. They could afford to have kids. And then, you know, for whatever policies, my personal belief is that, you know, the environmental policies, a lot of them were that government didn't want to spend money on infrastructure. When I was a kid, they spent 18% of the state budget on infrastructure. We had the best dams. We had the best roads. We had the best water systems. We had the best electricity. California imports over 30% of its electricity, mostly from Utah and from coal. I mean, what a bunch of hypocrites, right? Why don't we produce our, why don't we have our own power plants here? Why don't we spend money on infrastructure and never have a drought again? I mean, those are decisions that were, you know, policies that were abandoned in the 70s and 80s. And now people are coming around. They've got to try the Green New Deal. And for them, there's no green in their pocket in the Green New Deal.
Well, you know, back in the 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s, government encouraged infrastructure and projects. Now they stand in the way. They tell you why you can't do them.
Well, in Shasta County, before World War II, they were building Shasta Dam. Shasta Dam was supposed to be 18 feet higher. There had been so much fraud in government that when the war started, they realized what they had in the form of plans and such like that and were actually getting produced, a lot of it was fraud. So they passed something called the Administrative Procedures Act in 1946 after the war, you know, when they'd just done the Bretton Woods, to make a lot of things about government sort of boxes where they couldn't just rob and play games with accounting.
Sure.
So, you know, America learned a really hard lesson right before World War II that they have to have good infrastructure. And they hadn't invested in the 30s, and the war started, and, you know, everything starts moving and business started going up, and it was really a constraint. So, I mean, we need to go back to exactly that. We need to go back to the concept that we invest in infrastructure because it pays off.
where are we going to get the money?
Well, I think you have the money. You just got to, you know, release the money. You can't tax people into prosperity. I mean, that's the concept.
Well, they can sure tax us into poverty.
Well, that's right. I mean, but I'm saying tax you into prosperity. I mean, you have to have fair taxes, and you have to have taxes that actually get spent on things that generate more taxes. Think about that. California has raised its tax rates, you know, to be the highest in the country, and it's been like pushing on a string. We've raised tax rates, and you collect less revenue because people just get tired of being the goat and they move. And even worse than move is they just don't make investments. And that's where California is right now. That's why I think you're about to have an incredible, you know, regime change here, because they're done with it. Remember the last economic cycle started, of all things, a tax rebellion in California?
Oh, Proposition 13.
Exactly.
Yeah, but you know what it looked like to me when that happened? California went out of its way to go spend more money.
Well, it actually generated a lot more tax revenue, and government was able to spend more. But you know, I understand that, but I'm just saying that you got the benefit of of having those tax cuts, and they were tax cuts to encourage investment. Those tax cuts generated more wealth and income for Californians, and more wealth and income for Californians turned out to be more wealth and income for taxes.
So we got to go to a break. I wonder if they're taxing us on breaks now.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Where'd we go? There we are. Be here when we come out of break. 2 minutes.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Reading.
Hi, I'm Steve Coburn, proud owner of Country Air Pet Resort here in Reading. I invite you to come and take a tour of my revitalized pet resort. Our goal here at Country Air is to make sure your pet can relax and have a healthy, happy time away from home. With friendly, caring people, lots of fresh air and exercise, good healthy food, and plenty of pampering. There are no small cages here. What we offer are large temperature-controlled runs and spacious exercise yards that are great for fun and socialization. We even offer daycare. Cats are treated to a two-room apartment plus playtime in our playroom. So stop by and take a tour of the best. You and your pet will want to come back to Country Air Pet Resort, where our motto is, we treat your pets as if they were our own. Country Air Pet Resort, 549-3335.
Fall is the best time of the year to plant trees and shrubs. The nights are cooler and the ground is still warm, and this allows the roots to take hold and gives the plants a good start. Starting September 6th through the 21st, Gold Leaf Nursery's Big Fall Sale begins. Take advantage of their fall sale prices, and what a sale it's going to be. 40% off all 1 gallon through 24-inch box trees. Take 40% off all 1 gallon through 15-gallon shrubs, vines, and ground cover. The nursery is loaded with beautiful plants, shrubs, trees, perennials, and ground cover. Their roses, crepe myrtles, and verbenas are in bloom. They have a tasty selection of fruit trees and citrus with over 1,000 in stock and on sale. Come in and take advantage of this big fall sale. 40% off all shrubs and trees, 1 gallon or larger. Now in stock. Fall vegetable and fall color. Gold Leaf Nursery, 6186 Churn Creek Road, across from Tucker Oaks Golf Course and a quarter mile from Airport Road. Don't miss the big fall sale at Gold Leaf Nursery.
As we all get older, the one constant thing is the aggressive, excessive mail and advertising for Medicare, Medicare supplements, and Medicare Advantage. And almost every one of them is a call center with no idea of what you really need. Siskiyou Insurance has an agent that deals with nothing but Medicare issues and can explain the differences clearly between a Medicare supplement and Medicare Advantage. Call Greg Green at Siskiyou Insurance at 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
Thank you. We've got Redding's version of Delilah from the Little Rascals coming up. Let's hear her.
Are actually setting a bad record for the county. These are not just public officials. These are corrupt officials who think they're above the law. Now they have Richard Guerrero, their little buddy who's out going out there, and Leslie Monks from Liberty threatening another woman because she is running for school board. And that's his Jessica, who actually is running for school board. And how dare you them intimidate, try to scare her for her not to run. What? Is that your Republican people do? Oh, yeah, that's what you guys do. Richard actually threatened her by contacting her company and telling her that the company, that they better reprimand her for whatever she did. And he wants a letter to be sent to him because if they doesn't get one, he's going to go after their nonprofit organization. Chris actually is a public official also. He said Susan, her big ass, giant ass, were last night, was there. Ben, he talked about Ben. Ben, a douchebag. I like nothing more than to beat his ass and take his lunch money. These are your public officials, your Republican people. How dare you? How dare you treat people like that? You guys think you're above everybody? Intimidating? You suck, Pastor Jones. You suck, and I can't wait for you to be out of here because you are a terrible person. You are horrible. You're the worst person. You're a liar, a dictator, and same thing with Kevin, same thing with Chris. You are more disgusting because you follow him and you kiss
his. All right, thank you. That's your 3 minutes. Appreciate that.
Did you see how polite Kevin was when he cut her off?
I thought he did a good job.
You betcha. But, you know, we were blessed with that five times in that meeting.
Yeah.
5 3-minute increments. And then we had Christian. He's Spanky from the little gang.
Yeah.
Five times with Christian. That's a half hour of our time they've stolen. They just get up there and ramble on, and I guess there's nothing we can do about it.
Well, I think it actually is productive. And when I say it's productive, they're being so out front, you know, out and proud of who they really are, the way they talk, the language they use and such like that. I mean, it is just humiliating their position. And you know, instead of being victim, you know, they're trying to victimize.
Well, you know, it's bringing people's attention to what's going on. And we've got a lot more people paying attention to what's going on in our county. You know, I saw yesterday's paper. Well, I guess it's today's paper, online paper with a Record Searchlight. They've got Aaron Reisner leading the charge for the State of the City put on by the Chamber of Commerce down at the Civic Auditorium. And I wonder why she's leading the charge. Well, subliminally, they're backing Aaron Reisner against Mark Mazzano.
Yeah.
And she had absolutely no accomplishments when she was with the city of Redding, but they want to get her in there. And I think it's just despicable. I have taken and canceled my subscription to it. The only reason I was on it was I've lived here all my life, and I'd watched the obituaries mostly, and now they're not even reporting those. And the reason is they charge too much for an obituary. When my wife died about 4 years ago, it cost $50 to put her picture in and $4 a word. I spent $400 on her obituary. Some of these go on and on. They're spending a big fortune. And then I got to thinking how they've pumped themselves up to get some more money. They've got the best in Reading, the contest going on, the best old beauty salon, radio station, shoe shine, whatever. You look at all the advertisements in their paper and you wonder how much money they're making out of that. Well, they invented the best of Reading,
right,
and they're just scooping up the bucks.
Right.
Nick, can I ask you a question?
No.
Is there any correlation between the obituaries and the voter rolls?
Well, I guess there probably isn't.
Well, that's a, you know, that's a dicey issue here in Shasta County, is, you know, all our dead people voting. So I think that we are starting to have that lesson that Americans needed to learn, you know, this crazy stuff that goes on in Shasta County. It's not crazy now. It was crazy in the 2010 to 2015 period, you know, when they decided to, you know, take money for the spotted owl while the mills were closing. You know, well, they decided to say Shasta County is suburban, and the executives got a 51% pay increase. But the people who actually do the job in government, they didn't get any increase because their reimbursement was paid according to the community. So you had this, you know, greater expertise. I mean, that's kind of a statement itself. That the people that actually do the work, they were pushed behind. And the people who, you know, these executives and people that supervise them, they were pushed way ahead. I mean, the problem Shasta County has, the problem Redding has, the problem rural America has, is the costs don't make any sense. And, you know, the costs have actually gone down in rural America and gone up incredibly in the cities. So you're flipping that script. And that's why I think the future is in places like Redding. I mean, we have everything you'd want here. You know, we have an electric utility, and Redding Electric Utility, that historically has water power at really, really cheap rates, but they don't pass that through, you know, to the residents. They use it to subsidize other issues. I mean, I talk to people all the time. Their number one and number two issues are electric rates and also insurance rates. Now, they're unhappy with food and inflation, but those two, electric and insurance, those are government-controlled rates.
Well, if they wanted to give us electricity at cost, it would be dirt cheap here in Redding.
Absolutely. And then you'd have the business and the factories, and you'd have that 40-hour, you know, you'd have that $40 an hour wage that I said would, you know, solve the homeless problem. It won't solve all of it, but about 85-90% of it. You know, if you woke up in the morning and it was too expensive for you to stay home and not go to work, you'd go to work. I mean, that's the way, that's the incentive. When you talk about government giving incentives, the best incentive is a job I want to go to because I make good money.
Well, you know, I used to cut timber logging, and we were off for 3-4 months in the winter. And what I figured out is I would go get a job cooking pizzas and slinging beer in a bar for minimum wage. And I figured out that it's expensive to be unemployed. If you're just making a little bit of money, you're not out spending money.
That's right.
So we've gone to a rural county, but, you know, it just really irks me that Mary Rickard is so against a charter county. It seems to me a charter county gives the power back to the people to tell the government how they want their county run. And Mary Rickard's against that. That tells me she wants the government to tell the people what they're going to do.
Well, I think it's a respect of in yourself. If you have a charter county, remember that metropolitan, you know, that big metroplex down the way called Tehama?
Yes.
They've had a charter since 1937. You know, Shasta was one of the first counties, you know, when California was formed in 1850. So why wouldn't we be the have a charter? Why wouldn't we have people run the county instead of having the state? Why wouldn't we be the rural county with the charter? We'd be the largest rural county in the state's caucus of rural counties. And there's, I believe there's of the 58 counties, there's about 29 that are rural. And oh, by the way, we'd be the most important rural county in America. And, you know, you talk about getting, you know, attention, and people wanted to come and, you know, set up new businesses and factories. Why wouldn't you want to go to the top and the top? This idea that you're going to stay under the state as a general law county, you're going to, you know, have them take care of you because you can't be responsible yourself. I see a lot of responsible people here. I think they do a great job. And more importantly, it would get around that Shasta is the place you want to go if you want to have rules you understand and the community in control of government.
Well, when I was younger, I had a bumper sticker that said, "Tourists, go home, leave your daughters." But get back to the record searchlight. I've got a subscription, an online subscription to the Epoch Times. It's $10 a month, $100 per a year. And I think that is just a wonderful news site to go. So
I used to write for them.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I wrote 300 articles.
Oh, that's right. I remember you talking. You've got a high opinion of them.
Oh, I think they're great people. I mean, they were, you know, usually when you write for somebody, you got to wonder, you know, do they want you to spin it? I mean, the Epoch Times wanted real information, and they didn't want spin. So it was actually real news.
I'd wager if you go to the Epoch Times and ask if the Haitians are eating cats and dogs in Springfield, Ohio, that you'd probably get an honest answer.
Well, I saw one guy walking along with a goose, and the goose didn't look too happy about it.
Ha! Yes. Well, you know, anyway, moving on. Then we've got...
Well, let me say something about my Mountaintop Times. You know, my Mountaintop Times wasn't made to really compete against, you know, the Record Searchlight. But I get people come to me all the time and say, you know, we're covering the stories that they really care about. We did a lot of stories in the last week, you know, internationally. We talked about China. We talked about Ukraine. We talked about Europe. We talked about Israel. I mean, normally we hit more things tend to be state of California, Shasta County and such. But you just had this big role of important issues that came up internationally, and you know, we were covering it, and people are sort of saying that they're going to us. It's the Mountaintop Times. It's mountaintoptimes.substack.com. So we have a group of people that you know get it for free. We have a group of people that actually subscribe and pay us. And I think you know, if it's not worth paying money, don't pay. If it's worth paying money and you feel like you're getting something from it, pay. So that kind of election really, really works, and you can get real information in Substack. And I think that you know, the normal papers, you talk about the Reading Searchlight. I mean, it's really Gannett, isn't it?
Yes.
And you're getting the national story with their national position and national spin. And quite frankly, they're shrinking like crazy nationally. And I have no idea what's left here in Shasta County, but they've got to be down.
Well, there's very little local news in
it. I mean, the only thing you really have that, and we're talking about trying to do this, is they have some local sports, you know, especially high school sports.
Well, I've noticed lately in the last two or three weeks, they've been pumping new cafes and menus on the front page.
Right.
What's that all about?
Well, I think it's kind of desperate. They're desperate to get some kind of advertising news.
Well, yes, Best of Reading.
Best of Reading, that's right. Best of Reading. So I'm not so sure that, you know, if you pay me that I'm going to give you the best.
Well, getting back to Mary Rickard not wanting to be a charter county, she's against it's Proposition Q or P, I don't know which one it is. The proposition says if there's a vacancy in an elected position, the board has the option to leave it open till the next election, appoint somebody, or hold a special election. And she's against that.
Why would she be against it?
Evidently, she wants Gavin Newsom to replace somebody.
Well, that's right, because Gavin Newsom is not a guy who'd come to you know, Shasta County, and people say, hey, that guy, you know, he feels my pain. I think Gavin Newsom is a guy
who gives you pain.
I think he's a guy who gives you pain. So, you know, you either trust yourself, you're responsible, you're mature enough, you think you're sophisticated enough to manage your own life, or you let some guy like Gavin Newsom, who's, when's the last time he's been to Shasta County?
Oh boy, he drove through on the way up to the Klamath Dam about a month ago. So maybe he flew over it.
So he's, that's his idea of seeing the state. He drives by it.
Sure. I doubt if he's been east of the Central Valley.
Huh.
Maybe on his way to Tahoe.
Well, I don't think those are his people.
No, absolutely not. But, you know, getting back to Mary, her, you know, we need a jail. We're not going to get a jail. We can't afford a jail. But that came up during her forum with Corky Harmon. And she said she helped expand the jail by 64 beds. Boy, that sure cut the crime in Reading, didn't it? I think they filled that up in about an hour and a half. And then she was big on McGraney. She voted to replace McGraney, or to put McGraney in Tom Bozinko's spot, gave him a raise. When he got fired, she voted to create a position for him, gave him a $32,000 raise. Right now he's on the payroll.
How does that work?
Well, it doesn't work for us in a charter county.
I mean, does that work for a regular person? Right, in a charter county, you know, you get fired, you're gone.
Absolutely, and that's the way it should be. Right now, as we speak, Eric McGreaney is drawing almost $20,000 a month.
Wow.
And he's not doing nothing.
Maybe that's better, according to some people I talk to. You know, that before when he was doing things, he was very unpopular. His actions were very divisive.
Oh, boy. I wish we only knew. You know, I've started getting involved with local government, going to the meetings, expressing my opinion. And I found out that I know about 20% of what's going on. It's unbelievable what's going on behind the curtain.
Well, I think they're actually doing a pretty good job.
They are now.
Yeah. You take a look at the, I mean, one thing about, you know, this chaos, they always talk about chaos. The new board is chaos. The new board is actually balancing its budget. It has reserves. It's moving forward to try to address issues. The fact that they're talking about the jail serious, before they weren't talking about anything serious. They were just talking.
Sure. We need one. We can't afford it.
And we need to be, you know, we're going to build a brand new one way over here. It's going to cost $400 million. It's not going to have cost overruns. All jails have cost overruns. You know, so I think they're at least talking about real issues that can be resolved.
Absolutely.
And that's I think what, you know, and that's one of the reasons you have a charter is you ask the people to give input. On the current situation, if the state controls most of your actions and you're unhappy with local government, what you're really saying is it's your fault because you didn't have a charter.
No, that it wasn't Teresa that was on the front page this morning. It was Aaron Reisner. Somebody called in and corrected me, and they're mistaken. Maybe they've got a different email for or edition for conservatives and for liberals. Who knows? Play to the audience.
So Aaron got so she was endorsed by the Record Searchlight.
Oh, she just as well be.
Yeah.
You know, her picture's on the front, she's in red, and she's marching down the street, and she's two-thirds of the photograph, announcing that the state of the city talk is going to be at the Civic Auditorium. She's not even on the board. They should have had Mark Mazzano, or even
really?
Teresa. Yeah.
She's not on the board of that. She wasn't the, yeah.
No, she's not on the board right now.
So instead of getting the endorsement, this is worse. This is pretending that you're not endorsing her and you put her on the front page. Should be the handshake, shouldn't it?
Every chance they get.
Not that you need it, but yes, it is Reisner.
There you go. So anyway, where were we?
We're talking about how your mature adults would want to have a charter in Shasta County.
I mean, absolutely.
It is arrogant. Let me
vote on the direction my county's going to go.
I mean, I've walked down the streets of San Francisco lately, and that is not the way I want to live. I mean, you know, the swells in San Francisco and Sacramento, I don't like their lifestyle. I don't want it to be here. I like the Shasta lifestyle.
I didn't like the San Francisco lifestyle when it was booming.
Yeah, well,
I'm a plowboy from Redding.
Well, but when it was booming, it was fun, you know, and they kept it clean and they actually made it work. Now it's just dirty and it doesn't work. And more importantly, it's dangerous. I mean, why would you spend all this money and create, you know, the Silicon Valley and all these things that have happened and you end up with a dirty and dangerous city?
Well,
isn't that failure?
You know, my liberal neighbor told me it's all completely 100% George W. Bush's fault because the 2008 depression was completely caused by him. And that upped the rents and people can't afford to live there anymore.
So how does the depression up the rents?
Well, you'll have to talk to him.
So
he'll get on his phone and he'll type for a little bit and he'll come up with the answer.
Oh, that's right. There's some site there you can go for it. Yeah.
Silly
economics for you too.
So I made a suggestion at the Board of Supervisors meeting this last time and a meeting or two before that. I see all the positive changes that has come to Shasta County. And in my opinion, Kevin Cry has led the charge. He can be chair again next year.
Well, I think he's, you know, actually created an environment. I wasn't really knowledgeable until I applied to be CEO here. And then, wow, what chaos, You know, when you, it, just for the average person, you know, the average, the meanness and the viciousness and such like that, it's actually coming down.
Oh,
it's
yeah, really the recallers are running out of steam. Yeah. The chaos is 100% caused
you
by
didn't
the
like that Ken, you didn't like that, you know, Aaron Reznor lost, and so you spend more money to try to recall and, you know, try to make Kevin's life worse, and you know, here's a regular guy. He wasn't a career politician.
That's
he
right.
He wasn't doing this. He was a dad that, you know, got unhappy during the time that you had the COVID pandemic and actually started speaking. And he was well spoken. And people said, you know, Kevin, well, why don't you run for office? And he goes, well, okay, I'll think about that. And then he spoke a couple times more, and people said, yeah, Kevin, you should run.
He's certainly grown into the position.
I think he's done a fantastic job. Well, I mean, doesn't have a history of it. It's not like that's, he's not a lawyer.
That's right.
He's not that kind of guy that, you know, came, it was corporate swell.
The thing is, he's smart.
He's a small business.
He's smart. He's analytical. He can look and see what the problems is. He loves kids, and he hates to see money wasted.
Well, that's a place that usually wastes a lot of money is in government.
And that's why they don't like him so much. They're cracking down on him. But he and it's not just him. He had to have two votes. And Chris Kellstrom and Jonesy have done a good job. And another reason I am sour on Mary Rickard is she got behind the recall publicly, stood up, wanted to recall Kevin. And I just don't think that's the place for a supervisor.
Well, you know, you had an election. You know, people had had chance to choose. They chose. And then the people that lost weren't happy with choice by the people and then tried to run a special election. And, you know, special elections, most of us don't vote in special elections. It's just kind of, it's not something that you set your time up. So, I mean, I think it was pretty incredible that Kevin Cry literally walked his way into being a supervisor. I mean, he walked every street in his district here.
Yes.
And then did it again in the recall. And everybody else spent lots of money on big posters and having people beat pans at a corner and such like that. They didn't go door to door and actually talk. I mean, that's why he won the first time. That's why he survived the recall. I mean, it's a unique kind of situation when you're person to person. You don't like me. Here I am. Talk to me.
Oh, yeah, and he's got his coffee with Kevin. It's starting back up. I'm not sure when, but in the very near future.
At Kaleidoscope?
Friday mornings at 8 o'clock. And you can go down there and you can talk to Kevin about anything you want, whether you like him or not.
Well, I think that's just kind of what who he is.
Well, the thing is, that's...
When does Mary have her coffee with Mary?
Oh, boy, I think she has it by herself. But when has our board ever been transparent like that?
I'm going to say that everything is changing. You know, they tried that, you know, your betters will take care of you. The sophisticated people in Sacramento and San Francisco, you know, they have the capability, they have the training, they have the degrees. They're just a disaster. People want to go back to local control.
Well, if we just give them a raise, they'd try harder.
Yeah. Okay, I don't know how to respond to that one. I just know that if you have local government, you address local matters. It's not that you're there for the state of California. You're there for the local people.
And the local people should be in on and be able to voice their opinion.
What a concept. What a concept.
Yes. You know, the city of Reading could talk to the local people so easily by just sending a little questionnaire or a survey out on the electric bill. How do you feel about
that? That would be painful.
Oh, boy. Yeah, the city of Reading is, boy.
Well, I think we can, you know, that all these issues, the fact that we're speaking about Reading Electric Utility, which has this really cheap input, you know, they in 1900, they didn't want to be part of the swells in San Francisco. So they, it's Reading, Palo Alto, Santa Clara, Modesto, and I think one other. But think about that. Palo Alto and Santa Clara became the tech capital of America because they had cheap electric power. So don't tell me that economics don't work. It wasn't Stanford. It wasn't Berkeley. It was that cheap electricity. My mother was a city councilman in Santa Clara, so I knew all about that when I was a kid. You know, you have the same thing here in Shasta County. I don't think they've used it, you know, to attract really solid employers. We got lots of good businesses here, but boy, would we benefit if we had a couple big companies.
I believe President Trump demonstrated cheap energy drives everything, prosperity.
America not only today is the largest producer of oil in the world at about 13 million barrels a day. We produce what's called condensate, which is natural gas liquids, another 5.5. So we're actually at an all-time record, almost 19 million barrels a day.
And we were going to be selling liquid natural gas to Europe.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.